You're listening to Counterculture on RCR.
Reality Check Radio.
Welcome back to Counterculture here on Reality Check Radio with Marie. Now, I've covered some Kiwi political stuff with Lee. It's now time to talk about and cast our eye across to the United States and have a look at their upcoming election and just do an electoral 101. And who better to do it with than our own political Yoda himself, Cam Slater. Hey, Cam, how are you?
Great. How are you?
I am very good. And this was all prompted because there's been a selection of feedback that the inbox team has received. And I'll get to that a little later. Once I saw that feedback, I thought, actually, there's loads of nuances in the American political system. And we hear a lot of things in the media and lots of buzzwords, which are different to what we have here in New Zealand. And I thought, you know, it's probably a good idea to have a little bit of a 101 on US politics, and then we can sort of dive into where things are at the moment, which will just help frame for our listeners what to expect in the coming months right up until that November date.
Well, the United States is, in terms of politics, kind of unique. I love it because it's so brutal.
Oh, and dynamic.
And dynamic. It's changing all the time. If you look at, for example, J.D. Vance, which is Trump's vice president pick, a few years ago, he was a never-Trumper. He didn't want to have anything to do with Donald Trump. But then he saw how Donald Trump was as a president and then started to reassess things and change his mind. So that's what you can have happen in U.S. politics. You can all these candidates can go hammer and tongs at each other for their prospective party nominations. Then as soon as one gets selected, they're all best mates.
Mm.
And, you know, we kind of don't see that happening in New Zealand because our selections for prime minister, for example, don't happen. We don't have one. Well, that's done by the caucus, one of the MPs. Yes, you can have battles in the local electorate, you know, like Tamaki's had famous battles. Old Eden electorate had massive battles as well to get selections, of which I was donkey deep in almost all of them. You know, there's been other notable selection battles, Mark Mitchell, for example, in Orewa, or up in that area, whatever they call the electorate now. But it's nothing like the United States, and it's nothing like Australia. Australia is very similar to the United States in many respects, mainly with the brutality of politics. But I get all my sort of ideas for New Zealand politics from the Americans and then adjust it so that I can, you know, play in the sandpit here in New Zealand with a level of brutality in politics. And it sounds crude and it sounds awful. But the reality is that you're dealing with narcissists and psychopaths and sociopaths. And the only thing they understand is the brutality of the ballot box and the argument. Mm. So that's where I get my hints from.
And also, too, the brutality of that is it's not necessarily across the aisle. It's within one's own party. So you would have seen that in regards to the primary season. I mean, it's incredible. If you'd followed the primaries back in 2020 and Joe Biden was running and Kamala Harris was also running in that primary, it was, the Democratic primary was massive. I think it was, what, 16 to start with?
Yeah.
Before it whittled down. And Harris was absolutely eviscerated.
Yep.
Right at the very beginning, Tulsi Gabbard, who was at the time a representative from Hawaii, she just completely slayed Harris at a debate, and she dropped out there soon after. And she has been essentially not liked by many within her own party. And all of a sudden, we've had a complete flip. And I want to get to that a little later, but let's sort of zoom out. So they have this democratic process, which is absolutely brutal within their own side, select candidate. They've now bypassed that with what's gone on currently.
What you're seeing currently, Marie, is effectively a coup in the United States. You've got Biden, who's been told, you know, by senior Democrats, you're done. And when they say you're done, they mean you're done. So, you know, you've got that awful woman from California. She would have made some calls to Biden and said, I'm going to cut your throat if you don't sort it out. You've had Obama calling him up.
telling. Are you talking about Nancy Pelosi?
Oh yeah, Nancy. I try not to use her name. She's just so awful. And the senior Democrat saying to Biden, "You're done." Then he goes quiet. Then he announces, "I'm still going to be president, but I'm pulling out of the race and I'm nominating Kamala Harris." Well, she hasn't got any nominations from anywhere. No. They haven't even had their convention. And she's now the presumptive candidate. Now, Olivia doesn't think that she'll be the eventual candidate. And I'm sort of 50-50 on this as well.
Mm.
But what we've seen is effectively a coup in the United States, a bloodless coup, manufactured by a bunch of ruling elites, which is kind of funny too, because where we're going to end up talking about is these families that sort of create dynasties. The most famous, of course, is the Kennedy dynasty. You know, there was talks about, you know, John F. Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy, and there was talks about Camelot, right? And then you've got a front page of the New Yorker magazine released last week that had Kamala Harris on the front end, and they're riffing off that Camelot thing by instead just spelling it differently with a K in the front and calling it the new Camelot. It's kind of taking the Kennedys shtick and sidelining Robert Kennedy Jr. at the same time. And in the meantime, another dynasty, which has been talked about often, is the Obamas, and wanting to continue on with that, and of course the Clintons. But every one of those dynasties hate each other, like visceral hate.
Mm.
The Clintons hate the Obamas hate the Bidens hate the Kennedys. Everybody hates the Kennedys, and yet Kamala Harris is now supposedly the savior of the Democrat Party. It's hilarious.
No, it is hilarious. So let's start right back at the beginning in terms of how they pull the process together. Because they are a federalized system with states, mm-hmm. in their election, most people probably realize that they have two rounds of electorates, and they've also got, we're going to pull the judiciary out because they have what we call a triangular system. We're not going to worry about them, the judiciary, at this stage. We're just going to look at Senate and the House of Representatives. And they have a voting every, without going into too much nuance, you have states run by governors, then you also have representatives like MPs, the closest thing to our MPs, in the House of Representatives.
Each state is its own country. That's
it is its own country, yeah.
Texas is its own country. California is its own country. That's why it's called the United States of America, right? Mm. Because they are a bunch of countries that have joined together to form a super country.
So at this current election, there is not only voting for the president, but there's also voting for a certain number of representatives and a certain number of Senate seats. For a president, I don't think people realize how little power the president actually has in reality, in sort of cobbling together this group of 50 countries, as it were, together under those United States. They have executive powers and executive orders that can be rolled over and only can really stay in place as long as you're the executor. It's really down to what you can get through the House of Representatives and the Senate. Now, at the moment, that is split. You've got a House of Representatives, which is currently being held by the Republicans by the squeak of their teeth, and then in the same thing in the Senate by the Democrats. That has the potential to roll over at this next election, as well as the Electoral College,
mm-hmm.
which is allocations of votes given to each state proportionally based on its size.
Yep.
And of all of those, with the exception of two, which I think are Maine and Nebraska, I've got a funny thing, it's the other one, which do allocate their college seats proportionally, everybody else is a winner takes all.
Yep, that's right.
Yep.
So just in on the Electoral College, the way the Electoral College works, it is based largely on population. So the larger states have more electoral college votes. And the way it works is you get two votes per state that represents your senators, and then the rest is allocated on the number of representatives. So California is the largest. They have 54 electoral college votes. Texas is the next largest with 40, and Florida has 30. And there's some that have only got three.
Washington, D.C., for example.
Exactly. And, well, Washington, D.C. isn't technically a state, but they have given D.C. and D.C., you know, the District of Columbia does have some Electoral College votes. There's a total of 538 Electoral College votes, which is the name that Nate Silver created his polling company with, 538, he called it. And you need 270 to win. And that's the maths.
Yeah.
The only maths that you need.
So the interesting thing about this, of course, and this is where some of the buzz terms come up. So you guys have probably heard, I'm going to cover these now. So you've heard two buzz terms. One is a bellwether state. So Cam, explain to everybody what a bellwether state is.
It comes from farming, and bellwether was the lead sheep, right? So the narrative is that we have bellwether electorates in New Zealand. Hamilton East is one of them. To put it into a New Zealand context, you've got bellwether states in the United States, and if they fall for one or other of the candidates, then it's likely that's heading in the right direction for that candidate to win the Electoral College.
Mm-hmm. So I lived in Ohio, and Ohio had always been considered a bellwether state. So it also then adds credence to J.D. Vance being selected as the running mate for Trump, because, of course, he is currently based out of Ohio. So that's one thing to consider. The next one, of course, is either swing states or battleground states is the new term that I'm hearing now, because obviously it's more, you know, clickbaity. So explain to everybody what those are.
Well, those are states where it could go either way. Like, there's some states that are never going to change. Right? It'd be a miracle. California is one of them, for example. It's always Democrat. And that is an Electoral College head start for a Democrat candidate of 54 votes. But then you've got states like Georgia, Florida, some of the other states that give you an indicator. Sometimes it can even be places like New Hampshire. And even though New Hampshire's only got four Electoral College votes, that top right-hand corner of the United States where New Hampshire, Vermont, Maryland, Connecticut, and bordering on to New York and New Jersey, where they are, that is quite a few little votes in a very small area. And if you can get, for example, one of the first states to fall there, then you can often see a march start to happen around all of those adjoining states. So you look at those battleground states where there is a fight, and if it falls for Biden, Biden was going to fall for Biden, it didn't at the last election, then you have a good chance of being able to predict that perhaps we're going to see a Democrat result here. And same for Trump. If he starts winning places like Florida and Georgia and if he wins New Jersey, that's huge, right? Because that's usually Democrat. But there's polls that are coming out of New Jersey at the moment. You know, that's bordering on to New York, which is a strong Democrat city. There's polls coming out of there that's showing that Trump's ahead in New Jersey, which is unheard of. So if he carries that state, that's one of those indicators, those battleground states that you're going to see a result.
So in 2016, which for all intents and purposes, the mainstream legacy media had, you know, they had odds on Hillary in the bag for that election. Yep. What they hadn't anticipated was the resurgence in some of those swing states, such as Wisconsin, and actually one that normally does swing, but it was what they call the Rust Belt. So Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, to a greater or lesser extent, that Trump won, and they just didn't see it coming. Because when the votes came in earlier in the night, things were, you know, it was falling as they had predicted and expected.
Yeah, and because then, New Jersey and New York and Delaware and Maryland and all, you know, Maine, they see all of those all falling for Clinton. And they think, okay, this is all good. But then you're right, in that Rust Belt, Wisconsin and all up there in the north, all of a sudden started falling for Trump. It was a disaster for them. They couldn't cope.
So this time around, pretty much the swing states or those battlegrounds haven't changed, with the exception of probably Florida. So Florida's one that in 2000, for anyone that remembers the great Chad incident of 2000, where they had these punch card type voting machines, and it was a race between Bush and Gore, and it was literally won or lost on those Chads in Florida, wasn't it?
Yep, and it came down to a court case in the end. It didn't matter. This election's somewhat different, you know.
It is.
Some of the states that will be interesting to watch will be how Nevada, Arizona, and Texas fall. And you might think, why are those three important? Well, Nevada borders up against California. California's going to go Democrat. But Nevada, that could be iffy because there's a strong, long border there with Mexico. And the next state across, Arizona, exactly the same. It's got a border with Mexico, and it's got a massive problem at the border. And, of course, Texas with their border with Mexico. Massive immigration problems coming through that border. And those states sometimes go Democrat and a pretty strong Democrat, but the people in those states have had a gutsful of all the illegal immigration. And so you could see 56 electoral college votes in those three states. They fall for Trump.
And I haven't actually checked the numbers. I know at the midterms when they divided up the congressional districts, California lost two or three congressional districts because so many people had left California and most of them had gone into Texas. And I think Texas might have picked up one or two.
That's right.
Yeah, so there is also that dynamic as well, because that changes the makeup in the House. So therefore, if you're a president, there's a term called a lame duck president, which is when you're installed as president, but you don't control your party.
Or the House. In order to get your agenda and policy agenda through Congress and through the Senate requires really deft politics. We've seen that a couple of times. Famously, Newt Gingrich was the Speaker of the House when the Republicans took both the houses of the House of Representatives and the Senate, and that kind of made it really difficult for the sitting president, who was a Democrat at the time.
Right, I'm going to read some of this feedback now. So now that we've sort of set the stage of that's what goes down, I'm going to read some of the feedback. I'll go through all of it first, and then we will sort of dive into it. And part of the reason why, when you listen to what we talk about here on RCR, it's not that we particularly favour one candidate or another per se, but it will just give you some context of why we talk about the things that we talk about. So the first one is, hi Cam, interesting interview with Simon Lusk, but have you two grand old men of New Zealand political commentariat, have you ever heard of RFK Jr. or is he just fake news? And that was Chair Steve. Another one was, on all morning and no mention of RFK Jr. He exists, are you oblivious? After hearing Olivia on your breakfast slot, I think she makes a lot of sense. What I'm puzzled by is why Bobby Kennedy Jr. gets very little attention. RCR seems to forget Kennedy, who is also in the race for the presidency. I would love to see a debate between Trump, Kennedy and Harris. Frustrated to see your continual sidelining of RFK. He's a huge force of truth, committed to dismantling the corruption running through the regulatory agencies and the military-industrial complex. What is there not to like about him? I'm an avid listener and fan, supporter of RCR and your hosts. Amazing work. Thank you. But lately I've listened to a lot of political commentary from many hosts, especially on the American political situation, Democrats and Biden versus Republicans and Trump. What sadly and sorely missing is much mention or conversation about independent candidate Robert Kennedy Jr. I expect MSN is not going to mention him. That's a given. But I'd hoped that RCR hosts would mention this great human being fighting for so much of what our freedom and truth and community values strive for and believe in. I followed RFK Jr. for many years because of his fight against corrupt corporations, vaccine injuries and harm. During the COVID pandemic, he really put his head high above the parapet, speaking out loudly against much of the BS. Now, incredibly, he is bravely and courageously running as an independent in spite of the horrific murders and tragedy his family have endured, even if he doesn't stand a chance of winning due to the usual red-blue game being played out. Please honour this amazing man. I implore your hosts to spend time on his Facebook page, the Children's Health Defence and Defender web pages, to better understand what he's about. He's a hero of our crazy time. Thanks kindly. I haven't once heard him question the absence of Robert Kennedy from the debate, and Kennedy is also a presidential candidate. And finally, Robert Kennedy Jr. is the real and better alternative to Trump. And I've also had some feedback as well, but that's just an example of some of the feedback that we've received. I know Marty and I have talked about it in Media Matters. I mean, if I was in the States, probably where my heart would lie. But this is about the reality of the game and the game that it is currently. So just outline for the viewers in terms of where RFK Jr. currently sits in the milieu for the run for the presidency in comparison to Harris and Trump for us, Cam?
Well, you know, Robert Kennedy Jr. is, you know, an interesting character. A lot of people are basing their judgment on him for the past 3 years, and they haven't looked at his longevity and what he's achieved or what he's pushed. He's a hardcore greenie.
He's an environmentalist first and foremost.
Environmentalist first and foremost, absolutely. He gets there on the basis of his surname, so he's got name recognition. There is a tragic history in his family there, but the reality of this, and that's what we've got to focus on, and that's why we're called Reality Check Radio, right? We deal with reality, not hopium. And the reality is for Robert Kennedy Jr. is that he cannot win as an independent. He's ostensibly a Democrat, so when people are pushing Robert Kennedy Jr., they're actually pushing a Democrat. He was elected as a Democrat, repeatedly elected as a Democrat, still is a Democrat.
And he entered this race. He did actually enter the Democratic primary against Joe Biden initially before he pulled out as an independent candidate.
Yeah. When you're talking about Robert Kennedy Jr., a fine man, I believe him, you know, when he wants to go after the corrupt, and he was a strong voice, but he's only one of many, many senators who have had a strong voice going after the corrupt. There's plenty of others, but he is a Democrat. So if you're pushing him, you're pushing basically a Democratic candidate. He's not independent. He has no chance, and history tells us that. You know, we're leading up to the election of the 47th president of the United States. That means there's been 46 presidents beforehand, and only one of those has been an independent, and that was George Washington, the first president, and he was unanimously elected as president, was selected as president by the House and the Senate, and he was the only independent. Since then, there has been no independents with the ability to win. Now, there is a couple of little exceptions to that, and they're few and far between. The first is Theodore Roosevelt, who stood as a progressive, so he wasn't a Democrat or Republican. Those two parties existed in 1912. Teddy Roosevelt, a war hero, stood as a progressive candidate in the presidential election with a running mate of Hiram Johnson, and he came second, which is a pretty good quality, but he didn't win. And the other one that stands out hugely is Ross Perot, who had multiple attempts at standing for president as an independent. He was a wealthy billionaire. I believe he owned EDS, a big computing company. He poured millions upon millions into his campaign, and he only ever came third. But the only independent who's ever won a presidential election was George Washington. And he didn't actually win an election, you know, with the popular vote. He was unanimously appointed.
Mm.
So history against him. You know, you've always got to look at history as an indicator of what may happen in the future. Sure, you can get aberrations. But the second thing that I'd look at is look at credible, believable, and proven track record pollsters. And the reality is there's only a couple, and one of those would be Nate Silver, who I mentioned earlier. He used to be at 538. He's now out on his own, and you can find him by searching for Nate Silver or the Silver Bulletin on Substack. And he's got his models that he uses, famously predicted the 2012 election, the 2016 election, and the 2020 election. So I watch what he's saying, and he doesn't even mention Robert Kennedy Jr. because the reality is that it is a two-horse race in the United States. You can't win unless you've got either the Republicans behind you or the Democrats behind you. And Robert Kennedy Jr. has neither.
And also, too, he's not representative. He's not on every single ballot. The rules are so onerous. He's done really well. I think he's now got, just in the last sort of handful of days, he's managed to get, hold on, I'll just pull it out. He's managed to get enough votes to get himself onto the ballots of Secured signatures, it needs to get on the ballots in Alabama, Arkansas, Kansas, Massachusetts, Montana, North Dakota, Vermont, and Virginia. 2 days ago, and this was a few days ago, the campaign announced it had enough signatures to also get on in Connecticut, Idaho, Iowa, Maine, Missouri, Ohio, Oregon, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. Now, here's the thing. With all of those states, I think bar one maybe being Maine, it's winner takes all. Now, he's not going to win any of those states. He may pick up some potentially in Nebraska, it's college votes, and potentially, I think, is it Maine the other one? So that's it. So in terms, he's got to beat the machine of the Trump and Harris machine in order to secure any of those votes. However, and this is the big however, as we mentioned before, we mentioned those swing states, those battleground states.
Mm.
And in this election, they will be primarily New Hampshire, Minnesota, Arizona, as you mentioned before, Nevada, Georgia, Virginia. Florida is traditionally one, but I think we can take Florida out of that mix. I think actually the Republicans have got that sewn up. Michigan, Nebraska, North Carolina, Maine, and Wisconsin, which is the newbie since 2016. And the biggest one of that, the big daddy of all of those, is Pennsylvania. Mm. He's on the ballot in Pennsylvania. I actually personally believe that this election literally is going to be won or lost on Pennsylvania. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's the state where Trump, they attempted to assassinate Trump. So there could be a bit of a blip in favor of Trump in Pennsylvania. Kamala Harris has got one potential candidate for her running mate, a guy called Shapiro, who's from Pennsylvania. She's from California, so she kind of has to have somebody from the East Coast. It's kind of how it works, male, female, black, white, West Coast, East Coast, you know, Rust Belt, you know, cities, all of those sorts of things come into play. And, of course, they're being Democrats. They've got all of the identitarian groups that they've got to try and assuage and manage. And, you know, it's bizarre because you've got Kamala Harris who's trying to go for what she calls the coconut vote, which is, you know, people from the West Indies, where her father is from, but her mother's actually Indian. So she's trying to play the black card, even though she's kind of not, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, Pennsylvania could come down to that one state.
And this is where the excitement and the dynamism comes in with the American system, right? Is that when you look at the conundrum she's got, does she go with pragmatism and select someone like Shapiro who's in that key state and he's Jewish, so then comes with all those wealthy Jewish dollars that the Democratic Party rely on to stay afloat?
Yep.
Or does she have to concede to the rackety, noisy element of the Democratic Party, the activist wing of the Democratic Party, the Squad et al., who, of course, will hate Shapiro because he represents everything that they are opposed to, and will she select somebody that sits from that wing? But then they tend not to come with the dollars. They don't like to spend money, activists. They like to complain about everyone else having money and spending it, but they don't choose to spend it themselves. So it's a really interesting conundrum that the Democrats have painted themselves in a corner over, I think.
It's even more interesting on that because you've got Governor J.B. Pritzker, you know, who's based in Chicago, which is Illinois. He's making a pitch for vice president for Kamala Harris. Now, yes, he's a Democratic governor, but he's from the Pritzker family, and people are probably scratching their heads now and going, well, so what? Who's the Pritzker family? Well, the Pritzker family owns the Hyatt chain of hotels, all of them. Mm. They had it publicly listed. There was a major bust up in the family. The family all bought it back. He's part of that, right? So he is moneyed, elite, Democrat, you know, organizer type.
And isn't it his sisters that are funding the movie with Jacinda?
Yeah, that's right.
His sisters, yeah. There you go.
But just going back to Robert Kennedy and, you know, your comments about the Squad and the nutters that are in that, including Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, otherwise known as AOC, you know, completely batshit crazy. A Democrat, Kennedy supports Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her Green New Deal resolution, and he says he plans to implement it. So he's against geoengineering, so that's things like fracking, which provides natural gas, which gives energy self-sufficiency to the United States in many, many areas. And so he's a total green. He opposes nuclear energy. On his environmental policies, and he's completely out there on a ledge, you know. So whilst he fights big corporates, and yes, he has the slogans and everything talking about Bill Gates and the World Economic Forum and Billionaires Boys Club and Davos and things like that, that's all stuff we like to hear, right? But Trump says those things too.
Mm.
And is he another Trump? I don't think so.
No. And you look at, you know, because I've got he's pro-environment, but he's anti-war, anti-vax, anti-corporate corruption. And, well, I mean, Trump's definitely falls into the anti-war camp. Mm. I mean, that's been a huge thing for him. And the vaccination thing. So there was that leaked phone call. Did you catch Naomi Wolf's interview with Paul?
No.
It's an absolute cracker. It really is. And she talked about that phone call, but she also talked about the dynamics of what was going on with the assassination attempt and all the little machinations happening currently at the White House. And this is coming from a woman who has advised two campaigns. She's been a political spouse, a White House spouse. She understands the mechanics of that engine exceptionally well. And she's scared, genuinely scared at what's going on. They are never, ever going to let a candidate like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. anywhere near the White House. And they talk about the poor protection that they provided Trump. They never provided any protection to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. up until just now, because they don't want him anywhere near it. I think they would have loved the fact if somebody had popped him off. That would have suited them just fine, which again brings us back to Pennsylvania and why I think Pennsylvania is going to be such a key state. He's on the ballot in Pennsylvania. He's known there. And I think there are a lot of Democrats who saw what happened. And I'm wondering, I don't know how big this group is, and I don't know what your feel is, but I think that there are a lot of old school traditional Democrats who feel abandoned by the current Democratic Party in its current form, but can't quite bring themselves to vote Republican and for Trump, and will go with Kennedy because they have fond memories of his uncle.
Well, his uncle and also his father and his two uncles here, right? Because there was another Kennedy that was in there that he supported.
Yeah. Bobby Senior and Ted.
Ted, that's Ted. It. Yeah, you know, Ted Kennedy, famous for the Chappaquiddick incident. You know, when a dead body was found in his car that he knew nothing about. But yeah, so Pennsylvania is going to be interesting. But the only thing I can pick on that is that Kennedy would be like twisting the vote. And only taking votes off Democrats, so only taking votes off Kamala Harris, meaning that Trump can come through the middle and win. That's what it looks like from where I'm looking at it.
Yeah, that's what it looks like to me too.
Kennedy is so much a Democrat. I mean, people don't understand that. They think he's independent. He's not. This is what he's done in recent times. He's supported Obama. He supported the Clintons along with his sisters. He has backed numerous Democratic candidates. He was considered as a potential White House counsel on environmental quality chair for Al Gore in 2000. If Al Gore had won the election then, Kennedy would have been appointed by Al Gore. He was considered for the role of EPA administrator under John Kerry, another Democrat, and Barack Obama. So he is a lock as a Democrat. He's always stood as a Democrat. You know, his brother-in-law, the time in 2006, he was considering standing for the New York Attorney General, which would have made him run against his brother-in-law, who's another Democrat, Andrew Cuomo. Right? So he is Democratic Party royalty, you know. So people say he's independent. He's not. And the fact is he doesn't have the Democratic nomination, and history's against him there.
Mm.
I just see them as a spoiler, and it can go both ways. I mean, we're seeing the same thing in the United States as we saw here in the last election in New Zealand, where working Kiwis abandoned the Labour Party because the Labour Party had become too woke, too controlled by vested interests of various different minority groups, similar to the Green Party. We're seeing that with the Democrats in the United States, working United States citizens over all of the nonsense. And they like the plain speaking about Trump. And, you know, they go, oh, but he's a convicted felon. Oh, but he's a womanizer. Oh, but he's, they all know that. Voters aren't stupid. They know that. And they're saying, you know what, he might be all those things, but at least he's not a Democrat.
So then that leads to the flip-flopping with the media and Kamala Harris. I mean, it's almost like they're trying to create the Jacinda effect that we had here in 2017.
Exactly what they're trying to do. And they've actually said it out loud that Kamala Harris is going to follow the footsteps of Jacinda Ardern. They've actually said that in US media. You know, this is a change shortly before the election. We'll see the same thing happen. Kamala Harris will come storming through. You know, there's the same level of intelligence too. They're both ninnies.
Mm. Right? So do you think post-COVID, where there have been so many gaslights and people from both sides of the aisle have started seeing it and gone, really? And the Americans have seen it more than most. And then they've seen the gaslighting over the border, you know, because let's face it, she was the border czar and then she wasn't the border czar, according to the media. Do you think that voters will look at this attempt to lionize her, to get her across the line as president, and then going, yeah, no? Or they will just fall into line on partisan lines like they always do?
Well, there's a certain number of the population that believe everything the mainstream media says. There's a whole lot more of us that are more awake now to see what's going on. And it's not just the media that are gaslighting US society. It's also the tech companies. So, you know, if people were searching for attempted assassination of TR and you put TR into Google, you didn't get any results for Trump. You got Truman, you got people with different names. So they were definitely putting their finger on the scale, the tech companies. Facebook's Meta was doing the same thing. They said, oh, it's a terrible mistake.
Well, that's the unexpected consequence, though, of 2016, isn't it? I've written this down here, Cambridge Analytica.
Yeah.
Because Trump and his campaign used Cambridge Analytica to actually help get a reach via social media that had never been done before, and they targeted the key states that they needed to target in that disaffected Rust Belt vote to get them across the line. And then once that was realised, because, of course, let's face it, tech is renowned to being like Labour Party lovies here. They are overtly Democrat, and it was almost like they'd felt like they'd, you know, let their own side down. So do you think that this is tech's really perverted way of trying to redress what they did in 2016?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, that's the case. You know, the most of the tech companies that exist in the United States are headquartered in California. You know, California is facetiously called the Socialist Republic of California. It's a state that is in decline. You know, after, you know, the late 1800s, the discovery of oil, all of those things, you ended up with people migrating to California. It's the most populous state. But they've got more and more woke as they've gone by. But it's now a city, you know, most of the cities are overrun with beggars, street people, and you've got massive poverty problems. And you've got people who are in, you know, in key industries. And a classic case of that is Elon Musk's corporations that have been formerly based in California. He's up, just picked those entire companies up and moved them to Texas.
Mm.
Right? He's saying, I can't do business with this state anymore. Their taxes are incredible. And the tech companies are all populated by, you know, weirdos and freaks that parading around dressed as donkeys or giraffes or whatever they've chosen to be their gender. And they're putting their finger on the scale. But people are aware of it. I mean, we're seeing now in real time, and we can thank Elon Musk for this, ironically, and that he's freed up Twitter or X as a platform. And so now people are getting their news from there because they don't trust the mainstream media anymore because they know they lie. They don't trust the tech companies because they know they lie, but they do know that Elon Musk stands up for free speech. that things aren't getting censored on X. And you can see real-time analysis happening from people like Tucker Carlson, who's got many, many, many millions more of an audience than he ever had at Fox News. Tech can be used both ways. I mean, they theoretically should be neutral, but they're not. Facebook especially and Google.
Yeah, well, I mean, Google, I mean, it's famously, I think, isn't it, its actual corporate registrations in Ireland, isn't it?
Well, so is Facebook.
Apple, I think. Yeah.
We're doing that. Apple's the same, yeah.
Yeah.
They're putting the finger on the scale in the United States while keeping their money offshore. So can you trust them?
So then I hope for people then you can kind of understand. It's not that we don't, you know, we don't want to talk about RFK, but if we do talk about it, it'll be what effect he will have in that election. So for me, I will be watching his effect, particularly in Pennsylvania, because I think that that's where he's going to have the greatest impact, because that state is going to be so crucial. So I think that's what you need to watch out for. The other thing to look at is that leaked phone call, which Naomi believes was staged. But does that mean that the grounds are being set by Donald Trump? Was that a Trump olive branch to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to say, look, if I get elected, he's not necessarily asking for an endorsement, but there could be a place for him in his administration if he gets in?
I think Trump is a pragmatist. Yes, he values loyalty. And I wouldn't put it past him that he's got some sort of deal with RFK Jr. It would make sense to do that. Maybe he can use him in some areas where Trump's light in those areas, you know, particularly environmental policy or something like that. But bottom line is, he's a Democrat. He's not independent. And if you want to put RFK Jr.'s candidacy into a New Zealand context, it's a lot like our last election where we had a lot of people who, you know, everyone was saying that they were credible, that they needed to be involved in the debates. And you had me and a number of other RCR hosts saying, well, that's not actually going to happen. We even commissioned our own polls to prove the point. You know what? We did that poll with Matt King. He's a nice chap. He's earnest. But he was never going to win that electorate. And we did a poll and it said he would come fourth. And guess where he came? Fourth. Me in particular, but the station, we like to deal in reality. And there's many things to like about Robert F. Kennedy Jr., but the bottom line is he can't win. And when I see Nate Silver start talking about the potential of an upset that has got Robert F. Kennedy and some numbers, maybe I'll change my mind. But that's the thing. I will change my mind based on actual evidence rather than hopium.
Mm. No, I think that's really well put. So for listeners now who think, oh, okay, there's a lot more nuance going on there than just sort of people casting votes. Where do you think? So what are you seeing? I'm seeing Pennsylvania. What are you looking at? And what will you be keeping your eye on heading? Firstly, we've got that BP pick to get through, but then there's also what to look for heading into November. What are your predictions?
You know, a lot of people discount the polls. They say, oh, no, they lie. But they give you an indication, right? So I have a number of places that I go to look to get information. On my website, the Good Oil, I have a newsletter each day, weekday, that goes out that I send to my, you know, VIP customers. And I send them a selection of information that's across the political spectrum. So I look at websites like the Liberal Patriot, strong democratic focus, but they're sane. It's kind of like Chris Trotter in New Zealand, right? He's left wing, but he's sane. So you can have a discussion with Chris.
Such a rare unicorn.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's right. I mean, another one in New Zealand is Bryce Edwards, left wing, but, you know, he writes sensible things. Well, the Liberal Patriot is like that as well. Again, that's on Substack. Search the Liberal Patriot. You'll find it. In terms of polling, there's a couple of sites I look at. First one is Real Clear Politics. They're neither left nor right, and they're essentially an aggregator site, but they collate polls and run what they call the RCP averages. And that gives you an indication there as well. But the main person I follow is Nate Silver. He's got a track record. The guy is an absolute genius. His full-time job is actually playing poker professionally. So he understands odds and betting and all of those sorts of things. He he started off doing statistics for baseball and football. And then he thought, well, hang on, I can build a model for politics. And then he got into political prediction modeling and things like that. So whilst he's running models, he's usually based on reality. And he used to work for 538. And he left 538 because they were putting their finger on the scale when it came to the models. And he was against that. So he left. And he set it up as he's gone out on his own again. And he's built a new election model. You know, last week on Friday, he changed from the presidential election as Trump's to lose to being a toss-up, because that's what he's seen in the space of a week, that the polling is changing, which is affecting the modelling. But again, he puts an asterisk on that and says, until Kamala Harris is the actual nominee, then it's moot. It's a rolling feast. But he's worth watching because he explains in easy-to-understand language how his models work.
Mm. The thing I love is the sheer theatre of it. It is so riveting, and there's so much that's going to play out between now and November. And also, too, it does have massive effect for us. Unlike here, where you have really a uniparty, I mean, whoever's turn it is to take control, there it is not at all. Like, they're so dynamically different, the two parties, and how they tackle things are dynamically different. You know, I genuinely believe that a Republican-based presidency generally, I think, works better economically for the world as a rule, and also to geopolitics. I mean, you know, you look at what's happening across Asia and the Middle East. I think having someone stronger in the White House to help counteract that is vitally important. Certainly not Joe Biden.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that Iran and China, India, and certainly Russia consider Joe Biden to be weak. And they've taken diabolical liberties because they could. And I don't believe for a minute that if Trump had won the 2020 election, that the Ukraine war would have kicked off. I don't believe for a minute that if Trump had won the 2020 election, that Iran would have been a bit more circumspect in funding terrorism, because they know that Trump talks robustly, somewhat crassly, but you're in no uncertain terms that if you step over that line there, he's going to wallop you.
Mm.
You know, they see Biden as being weak. So, yeah, it's interesting. Again, let's put it into a New Zealand context, though, so people can understand what is the Democratic Party and what is the Republican Party. Well, the Republican Party and the National Party are both members of the International Democratic Union, but you couldn't get them further apart if you tried. I mean, the National Party could fit very nicely into the Democratic Party. And in fact, in many respects, the Democratic Party is more right-wing than the National Party is in New Zealand.
And that's scary when you think about it.
Exactly. Right? People think, oh, the National is, you know, right-wing. It's just not. It's very much a left-of-centre party in New Zealand. ACT is a slightly right-of-centre party. And New Zealand First is a right of centre party, right? The Labour Party is left of the National Party and would be the far left of the Democratic Party. And the Greens are so far out to the left, it's not funny. So that puts it into a New Zealand context. Many National MPs would be happy to coexist with the Democratic Party. And in fact, you've seen this when Hillary Clinton has visited New Zealand, for example, National MPs fawning all over Hillary Clinton. Right, you see National MPs going on, you know, and even if you look at National's pollster, like David Farah, who's vehemently opposed to Donald Trump, thinks that Biden's a better candidate than Trump was. You know, is he being mischievous? I don't think so, because there's a reason why, you know, mates of David Farah call him Pinko.
Yeah.
So you know, don't try and put your New Zealand values on the United States, because there's a mismatch.
Mm.
Right? It's just a huge mismatch.
Yeah.
If you believe in free enterprise, if you believe in the worth of the individual, if you believe in a smaller government, then the Republicans are the party for you.
Yeah.
If you believe in state control, government control, you know, censorship, all of that sort of nonsense that goes on. Then the Democrats,
open borders.
Yeah, open borders. You know, the Democrats are very much globalists. The Republicans are very much nationalists.
Yeah, and that's probably actually a really good way to understand it. So I hope we've answered some questions for everybody on this. And, yep, as I said, we're not against RFK at all, but we need to face the reality of what is going to play out in the United States in November. And I think it's going to be fascinating. You know, get engaged with it. It's something that you'll really enjoy. I know we will talk about it more. I know Trevor Loudon and I talk about it. And I know you've got your people that you'll be talking about. And Olivia is all over this. This is like her absolute passion. So we will be bringing our sort of views on the American election. And Cam, thank you so much for chewing a fat with me this morning, chewing some fat. And good oil going well. I love getting my email every day to tell me where to look. It's brilliant.
Anyway, a little final one, just for a bit of a laugh for the listeners. People talk about, you know, RFK is on the ballot and he should be in a debate. Well, it's pretty likely that a guy called Vermin Love Supreme, right, is going to be on the ballot. He's been on the ballot a number of times. This is a guy who has a big, long sort of Santa Claus beard and wears a gumboot for a hat. And he periodically stood for president of the United States. So, you know, maybe we should put him on the debates as well. Vermin Supreme.
There you go. Something to look out for. Hey, look, thank you for your time again this morning, Cam. It's brilliant. And, of course, don't disappear because there's a lot of politics today because Marty's up here next with Media Matters. And we generally find ourselves wading through what's going on in the papers, particularly from a political sphere. So don't disappear. Here's Marty's here next. Thanks, Cam.
You're welcome.
Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.